You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. These days, global citizens are becoming more and more reliant on the internet, not only for personal and social reasons, but wheels of commerce are gathering speed in cyberspace as well. Banks encourage us to check our account balances, pay our bills online. Retailers offer us incentives to buy online, and most importantly, the internet, for most Australians, is where we get our news and research our purchases. But what would happen if the internet just disappeared? Well, this is exactly what happened to two Australian websites last week, belonging to the Prime Minister of Australia and the government body that regulates telecommunications in this country, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, otherwise known as ACMA. According to reports in the media, hackers temporarily shut down Kevin Rudd's website in an apparent protest at government proposals for a mandatory internet filtering scheme. The website of the Australian Communications and Media Authority was also taken down by the attack at about 7:20 p.m, but both sites were reported to be back online an hour later. Stephen Conroy, the Minister for Communications, was also targeted. A website purporting to be responsible for the attack said the proposal for internet filtering would block legal content and take censorship to a China-like level. It also stated that not only will your rights be at stake, but internet speeds will slow down by 70%, be mandatory for all Aussies, and will not protect us from evil at all. Motives aside, the websites that were attacked were the victims of a DDoS attack, otherwise known as a distributed denial of service attack. A DDoS occurs when multiple systems flood the bandwidth or resources of a targeted system, usually one or more web servers. This is usually the result of a controller of a zombie network, giving instructions to all the computers in the compromised network, a command which instructs them to continually try to connect to a specific website. And in this case, it was the Prime Minister's site and ACMA's site. As a result of the vast amounts of traffic generated to these sites, it makes it very hard, if not impossible, for legitimate users to connect. It can sometimes cause web servers to crash, as they just can't cope with the demand on the site. In more recent times, an online betting site run out of Alice Springs was forced out of business by a Russian syndicate, who tried to extort cash out of the owner. They too used a DDoS attack to render the site inoperable, but such was the size of the attack that it took out all of Alice Springs and most of Adelaide. It was even felt as far away as Sydney. So, looking at the bigger picture here, if hostilities between countries ever escalated to that of Cold War proportions, it wouldn't take too much to seriously hinder, if not prevent, a country from using the internet, and in effect, bring it to its knees. A spokesman for Senator Conroy said that those responsible were misguided because the proposed filter would only block illegal content. But maybe it's the government that's misguided. If this havoc is what a small group of wayward, misinformed individuals can achieve, imagine what a well-organised, well-orchestrated group of potential terrorists could achieve. Maybe the next 9/11 will be played out in the virtual world, not the real world.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner likes what he sees in iTunes 9, but sees red over the lack of blue. The ABC looks to partner with more ISPs to offer unmetered access to its free iView on-demand television portal. Apple CEO Steve Jobs is back in the public spotlight for the first time in over half a year, but looking as healthy as his latest operating system, Snow Leopard. And the regulators to freeze nuisance 000 callers. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, children rescued from a stormwater drain use Facebook, not 000. Government websites are hacked in protest over the proposed net filter. Steve Jobs himself launches the new iPod Nano camera. The ABC's managing director, Mark Scott, gives James Murdoch a blast on the BBC. And the space shuttle Discovery lands safely in California. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Two girls stuck in a stormwater drain in Adelaide last week raised the alarm using their mobile phones and the online social network Facebook. Mr. Glenn Benham from Adelaide's Metropolitan Fire Service says that it's worrying that the two girls, aged 10 and 12, used the social networking site rather than ringing 000. The girls updated a Facebook status to say they were lost in a drain on Honeypot Road at Hackham in Adelaide's southern suburbs on Sunday the 6th of September. A friend who saw the Facebook status then alerted authorities, initiating a search for the missing girls. Mr. Benham at the MFS said if they were able to access Facebook from their mobile phones, then they could have called 000 and the fire brigade would have got there quicker than relying on someone being online and eventually having to call 000 anyway. The MFS said that the girls were rescued at 7:30 p.m. and did not require medical attention. An attack on government websites last week is being investigated by the Attorney General's Department. The hackers, who flooded the Prime Minister's website with a denial-of-service attack, have already outlined their plans for a larger, more damaging barrage against the .gov.au namespace. The attack was a response to the government's proposed mandatory net filter, which is currently being trialled by several internet service providers. The hackers, who say they belong to a group simply called Anonymous, are calling for Communications Minister Stephen Conroy's internet censorship policy to be dropped, and also for Senator Conroy to resign. A spokesperson for the Attorney General's Department said the Cyber Security Operations Centre in the Defence Signals Directorate had been providing IT security advisors in each of the targeted government agencies to assist with monitoring and responding to the threats. The department refused to comment on the escalation in threats or whether the matter had been referred to the police. After a six-month break to recover from major surgery, Apple's chief executive, Mr. Steve Jobs, appeared at an event last week to launch new products, including the iPod Nano camera. BBC News reported that Apple's products appeared to take second billing to Mr. Jobs' appearance. Mr. Jobs spoke candidly about a liver transplant operation he received in Tennessee about 5 months ago. Mr. Jobs then showcased the new iPod Nano with a built-in video camera, FM tuner, and voice recorder. The FM tuner contains a live pause feature, which can buffer up to 15 minutes of received program. There's also an iTunes tagging feature, which can identify songs being listened to on the radio, and then allow users to tag and purchase songs in iTunes. Apple's new iPod Nano is priced from $149 to $179. The managing director of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, Mr. Frank Scott, jumped to the defence of Britain's public broadcaster last week after a brutal attack on its services by James Murdoch. In a controversial lecture at a recent television conference in Edinburgh, News Corp's James Murdoch branded the scope of the BBC's broadcast and online operations as chilling and claimed its news services were throttling the market. But the ABC's Mr. Scott said that James Murdoch appeared to want to limit the BBC to the point of irrelevance at a time when News Corp wanted to start charging people to read news online. The Age Tech reported last week that Mr. Scott slammed Murdoch's suggestion that the future of independent digital journalism depended on the public having to pay to read news online, instead of for free on websites of public broadcasters such as the BBC and the ABC. Murdoch's speech reignited a fierce public debate in Britain about the BBC, its services and its funding by a licence fee, an annual charge of £140 levied on all colour TV users. And the space shuttle Discovery landed on Friday last week at Edwards Air Force Base in California. Shuttle mission STS-128 to the International Space Station lasted 14 days and saw astronauts deliver a new crew member to the ISS along with science experiments, equipment racks and supplies. Technicians at Edwards Air Force Base are now preparing the shuttle for its next trip, which is on the back of a modified 747 for return to NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I had a Telstra Liney over at my place during the course of the week.
Scott, you're in the wrong job.
Of course, Mr. Conroy's been in the news.
Express buses now have free Wi-Fi.
And then your iPod can tell you where to go.
Well, let's see if common sense prevails there.
I'm sure that's what they will claim.
Yeah. Nothing to see here, move on.
That's right.
It's change, which a lot of people have problems with.
It's not only on websites, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's in your mobile phone.
Yeah.
Don't talk to Dr. Ron on the internet. Ain't nobody stranger.
Yeah. Oh. Speaking of confusing,
yes,
or speaking of arrogance, probably is more the point. Do you reckon a lot of people uplink these days?
This all sounds like the foundations of a decent notebook, but nothing revolutionary.
What you do is, if you've got multiple windows open, let's see if I can get a... So I've got a couple of windows open there.
Yep.
Now, if I grab this one and I
this
go...
This is good for radio, isn't it?
Great.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. In front of me this evening, Dr. Graham and JD, with noticeable absence by the small fella who normally sits in the middle there. So, evening, lads. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Andrew. Well, good to be back.
Good, yeah, good to have you back. Where have you been? Did you bring a note?
Yeah, I've got a note for Mum. Yeah,
good. Gee, lots has been happening. I thought you just kept your head down because
too many Apple things.
Lots of Apple things flying around in space during the course of the week, the last few weeks since you've been on. So,
and notably, things that didn't happen.
Yeah, like what?
The rumored
tablet. Yeah, that sort of thing.
And
yeah,
the camera and the touch and all those sorts of things didn't happen.
Oh, well, you know, you can't sort of dish it all out at once and people expect these things, won't
they? That's right. There's nothing to sell next month.
But lots to talk about in Apple land tonight. So, yeah, obviously we'll get your thoughts on the Snow Leopard. Have you loaded it up yet?
No, I haven't. I actually need my computer to work, so I usually wait for the revisions to come out.
Okay,
so.
Now there's the answer that we want. I think I've been reading Adam's tweets during the course of the week about, oh no, it's just crashed again type sort of scenario. So, yeah. And one of my colleagues at the office, also Brian, also has loaded it up and wishes he could roll back.
Mm.
There's a lot of interesting little things that have gone on there, which...
Well, you never get a .0 release, do you? Graham's of a similar opinion, I think.
I don't know. Maybe Windows 7's doing all right, just quietly.
Well, yeah, but... it's had a lot of a lot of public exposure through its very, very public beta and release candidate programs. But, yeah, no, the first release is always going to have bits and pieces in that were missed because of just the huge... The huge user base that tries to install it. So, yeah, someone will always have something slightly different on their system.
Yes. Oh, well, Mr. Jobs came out and showed us all his new nanos during the course of the week.
And thanked his donor and all that sort of thing.
He did. Pity his operating system's looking just as healthy as he is at the moment. So we'll have to wait and see there. But, no, good to see him back on the stage again, doing what he does best. But, yeah, the new Nano, that looked pretty good at first face value. We've got one in our household, but
yeah,
not one of the
nice
new ones.
And Apple have finally put a radio tuner into their iPods, which has always been an aftermarket thing that people have been screaming for.
So. What about the delayed thing Dr. Ron just mentioned in the news there? You can actually hit the store and playback later option on your thing and then find the music that you want online.
This is the iTunes delayed synchronization issue.
Yeah, well,
which happens just about every time they upgrade iTunes. So.
What happened to iTunes? There was once again Brian in the office today was saying, "Oh, he upgraded on his machine and it said you have to reinstall it. It didn't install properly, and then he did it again, and then he got it again.
That, but, yeah.
And it happened on his Mac and on his PC. So, but my iTunes 7 upgrade that I tried seemed to go swimmingly.
That'd be because we're at iTunes 9 now.
Yeah,
I was that explains it. Sorry, I'm just catching up.
I tried to sync my iPod the other night or last night, and
have you got one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I didn't think you'd have such compressed devices there, Graham.
It came up and said, would you like to install the update to 9.0? And I thought, 9.0? I thought I was running 8. And I checked and I was running 8, so I said, no. Because I thought, no. Again, as you say, with a .0 release... probably not going to risk that just on the first day they're offering it.
Warlock on our chat says iTunes 9 is the loveliest iTunes ever. It rocks.
Oh,
so there's
awesome.
Some bouquets out there for it. I must admit, my installation on Windows 7, which is probably where I was getting my things around the wrong way.
You're forgiven.
I loaded up on Windows 7. It went on smoothly.
And it popped up with that new feature. Do you want to share your library with other members of the
now
household?
That's the key feature. You can now share your DRM library with five other computers in the house or near the house.
There is a bit of a catch to it. And I think Adam's going to tell us all about that later on in the show too. Because, you know, nothing's ever quite as straightforward when it comes to the old Cupertino boys, is it?
Well, you see, in my case, I moved my entire iTunes library from my desktop to a server. And so I can share it back to the desktop in a certain way, and people that have played with iTunes in that way will know that you can share them, but you don't get the playlists and all the other funky things that the host machine would have normally. So I'm quite looking forward to being able to actually see my playlists on my desktop again.
I'm in the situation where I'm going to have to move iTunes from my old computer to my new one.
Yes.
And I'm not quite sure how to do that. And it looks like I can move the library, but all the settings and all my podcast subscriptions and all those sorts of things, I have to reset up manually, do I?
No, all of that will go across.
I can move all that across?
Yep, you can move the whole lot.
Okay.
You just need to be careful. If you've been sneaky, and I tend to be sneaky with where I install stuff, and you've put parts of your library in different places to the main library, you need to move both of them.
Okay.
So, for example...
Well, both libraries, but wouldn't you have to anyway?
Yeah, you do. But normally it's in one music directory, depending on which operating system you're using. But if you've been tricky and you've decided, no, I'm going to put all my music in one special partition because it's uber big and, you know, it'll take all of that stuff, then the XML files that control your database, so where things are, what your ratings are, how loud you like it, all those sorts of things, will actually be in the original directory. Yeah,
they're where it thought you were going to put your
Correct.
Music instead of where you actually did.
And that includes, if you've got an iPhone, it includes all your applications are stored in that same directory, not where your music is.
Oh, okay.
So you need to, and your movies may be in one or other place, which is a problem I've got as well. you need to know where you've hidden stuff so that you can move it. But it is easy to move and it will work and you'll keep your licenses and all those sorts of things.
Ah, good. All right, I'll have to do some reading. I'm sure there'll be a how-to out there somewhere for me.
Plenty of them, and if you can't find one, let me know, because I've done it to Jen's machine not so long ago.
Very good.
In fact, she even changed from the PC to the Mac at the same time.
I wonder if I should upgrade to version 9 before I move, or...
Whatever you do, once you've upgraded the version of iTunes, and this goes for any version of iTunes, it will change your library.
Right.
So whatever you decide
to do... It doesn't. It's a pain in the bottom. And trust me, when I've had 120,000 songs on it, it takes a while to re-index.
Well, there's that. And also, you can't roll back from it easily, usually. So if you're moving it, like I have, from one machine to another, but you're keeping both machines alive, just make sure you've got the same version on both machines and you're happy with that.
So the simplest way would be to make my new machine right would be to install the current version on the new machine, upgrade
my
old machine.
You're currently using... across on the other machine, and then you know your library's working, and then do the upgrade on it.
Oh, okay. I was going to say the other way around, so I don't have to do so I'm only installing one version on the new machine.
Entirely up to you. Depends what you're prepared to
All right.
So I'm gathering iTunes 9 is fairly popular, judging by you guys, obviously, because Graham, you're a bit of a techie person, and I use it for more so for professional reasons, to search music libraries for tracks for TV commercials and TV programs. And that's why I've got 120,000, because the record companies just keep throwing discs at
stuff
me.
At you.
And you just end up putting it on the server. I've actually come to running it on its own machine now.
Yes.
I have my iTunes machine. So that when you do the upgrade and stuff, it doesn't slow down everything else. So
with that big a library, that's probably a reasonable suggestion.
Yeah.
The reason I have it is purely and simply because I like podcasts, and it makes podcasting very, very simple.
But anyone with
iTunes and
Apple device sort of has to have it, don't they? There's no...
Well, that's right. You have iTunes because you've got an iPod.
Or an iPhone, or an iThis, or an iThat.
And it's as if it's one device. It all goes together. The software that controls your iPod or your iPhone is iTunes. It's as simple as that. It's not a separate thing. So, and it makes my podcasting all work, except that they play in the wrong order. Apple, hello, listen.
You want latest to earliest rather than earliest to latest.
Can I please play my podcast in order? It's not a big ask.
Mine do.
I bet they don't. Do they?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take this outside after the show, shall we, boys?
Tell me what I'm missing. They play the newest one and then the second newest one, and then they play in reverse order.
Oh, no, that's possibly right.
Yeah. Mm. No, I want to play them in order. So if I've got three that I haven't listened to, I want to listen to the third one, the one from 3 weeks ago, then the one from 2 weeks ago.
There'll be a way to do it. I can't think of it.
I don't think there is. It's really annoying.
I've got my Nokia mobile phone, which I listen to my podcast on, because I don't have an iPod, and it just puts the latest one at the top. Very handy. So when you're driving along and listening in the car and you want to hear your latest thingy.
Yeah, but that's what the iPod does. It puts the newest one at the top. But
isn't that what you want?
Okay. No, because if I'm three episodes behind, I want to listen to the one from 3 weeks ago first.
I didn't know that. Well, obviously that's a personal habit, really, if you like listening to the old ones. Obviously that's the type of podcast you're listening to, where you need to hear the first one.
So you listen to them in order.
Yeah.
So if I listen to a podcast where they do a two-parter, part one and part two, I hear part two on my iPod. They want me to listen to part two first.
Now, Andy B on the chat is saying that Graham's right. The iPods play in reverse, but the iPhone plays in the right order. I've got to say the shuffle plays in the right order, because that's how I used to listen to my... not Tech Talk, in fact, because I do that live normally in the studio.
Yeah.
But the Retro Maccast from the US that I tend to frequent for old Mac users, that used to play in the correct order.
Oh, okay. So I've made a mistake by buying the
wrong version of the iPod.
The flagship iPod Classic. I've bought the biggest and best iPod I could, and I shouldn't have done it.
Warlock has an iPhone, and it plays the same as GC says. So there you go.
We have to do a survey now.
And if you want to come along and send us your thoughts on anything that you might have seen or heard tech-wise this week, by all means, a bit of a full board this evening in the chat room, just come on to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Log in and come and say good day to us, wherever you might be, listening to us live in New Zealand or in Melbourne. Or even further afield on the podcast, you can't chat to us live. If you're seeing something. That's the only problem with podcasting. You can't interact live. You have to do it on email.
No, but podcasters can, use
the forum. The forum's good for that, exactly.
Yeah, because that's not real time and everybody can catch up as they hear the show. They can put their comments up and everybody can read them and respond. It's
fantastic.
It is good. It's designed for that non-real time interaction.
Now, there's people sitting in this room who can't do what I'm about to say, and that is enter our Wacom competition. Did you hear about the Wacom competition?
I saw the email, yes.
Adam's done a good deal with the Wacom people in town, and they've come to the party and given us a Wacom to give away to one of our listeners.
Woohoo.
Which Dr. On sprung on me last week, because I didn't know about I heard of it, but he told me the finer details of it during the course of the week. If you would like to be in it, and you have to be in it to win it, visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. There's a banner, click the link, follow it. But all you have to do is tell us, I think, in 30 words or less, why you want a Wacom, why you want a pen.
A Wacom is a tablet. It is.
It's what Apple people have been expecting and hasn't come.
Oh.
But this is more of a device.
This will work on an Apple.
Yes, it would. It does. Yes, you're right. And it just plugs in the USB thingy on the side of it. They're terrific. If you have no idea what we're talking about, it basically replaces your mouse. Because, let's face it, when you're born and bred, I grew up with a pen in my hand, writing and drawing and stuff like that. And then these computer thingies came along and they gave me a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult to... You ever tried signing your name with a mouse?
Yes, I have, actually.
Or just even sort of like drawing or filling in if you're doing a bit of,
That's what scanners were invented for.
Yeah, exactly. But, and it just doesn't quite work, a mouse. So come along and we're giving away one. So if you want one, the one and only...
And if you plug it into your Mac, Inkwell will do your... writing to text translation for you. So.
Oh, yeah. It's the Bamboo software. I've got a couple in the office already because they're terrific. Everyone in the office prefers to use a pen rather than a mouse. So we've got all these dead mice in the in the office. There's things without batteries in them.
The exterminator in
front. Yeah, that's the one. But it's funny because you can't lose your Wacom pen. If you lose that, you're really...
Is it special?
It's special because you can't use any other thing on your tablet. You've got to use the Wacom pen. And they have a habit of being taken home in a pocket or something. So we've now got four of them. So at least there's a couple of spare pens floating around.
And they're probably hideously expensive, are they, the spare
pens? Well, no. I think the whole get-ups are just over $100.
Okay.
For the tablet and all. And it comes with a mouse for those people who really want to use a mouse. Mm. But they're terrific. So if you want one, we've got one free to give away to someone who lives in Australia. Well, has to have the mailing address in Australia because we're too... Dr. Ron doesn't want to send it overseas. So, come along and feedback. Well, yeah, you can email us at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au with your 30 words or less about why you want one, or just follow the
and
link
whoever
on the
sends us the most
website.
Interesting story. Well, yeah.
Yeah, and you've
make
got
it a haiku or something.
And I, I'm now that you've been talking this up for a couple of weeks now, how good these tablets are. And, I have never used one.
Yeah, well, once
but
you...
But I'm starting to get curious. I want one to play with, and I can't enter the competition. I'm
no,
allowed.
You can't. Bad luck. But they're a bit like a microwave oven. Until you have a microwave oven, you don't know what you're missing.
Okay.
And these devices are just that. So normally...
But I reckon I'm pretty good with my mouse. I don't draw. I'm not an artist. I just want to use programs.
Maybe so. But this just makes you go so much faster when you're doing things like Photoshop-y editing sort of stuff, and even just general word-to-word stuff. There's a little you can sign your name. It actually turns it into a writing pad, and you just squiggle your name, or you can actually handwrite, and it puts it down in text as well. So some snazzy stuff.
Type faster than I write, I think.
Do you? Yeah. It's one of the things when we went to school.
Well, I've lost the habit of writing.
Yeah, have you tried looking at your handwriting lately?
It's shocking.
It is. It's pretty atrocious,
isn't it? Yeah, I just have completely got out of the habit of writing with a pen. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. Let's talk about what's on the rundown tonight, because there's a fair bit happening. Yeah, I know. We've just got to it now. AMD, in particular, they're the competitor to Intel. They make microprocessors.
The CPU chips that go on your computer, yeah.
Anyway, they've got a bit of a push for DirectX 11 into laptops early next year. They're gunning for an improved multimedia experience in Windows 7 with the new hardware. Okay. And let me say, Windows 7 is handling all my multimedia requirements exceptionally well, even to the point where it's loading up a lot of stuff, which is not even – drivers aren't available for it. Like I loaded up some Avid software, which is the editing software that we use, and I thought, oh, this got two chances of loading up on Windows 7 because of all the drivers it has. Yeah, that went on fine, absolutely beautifully. Excellent. So I was quite suitably impressed for that.
I think they've actually taken care of some of the backward compatibility issues there.
Absolutely. And the button that says, I don't have a driver, would you like to check online to find one, actually works.
Wow. And it works really well. Yeah, drivers for things that aren't included on the DVD, on the installer, are online, and they just work. You just click, I want to look online for the driver for my old printer that,
It goes to reputable sites, unlike those of us that Google for drivers.
Yeah, update.microsoft.com. Yeah. It goes and gets it from Microsoft. So they've got drivers there. They're just not putting them all on the DVD.
Right.
So, it works really well.
Mac have done that with their Leopard. They've taken all the printer drivers off.
Okay.
Only loads up all the printer drivers.
Yeah. Yes. Only loads up what you want now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where they got all their disk space savings from.
No, there's another story behind that, but I'm sure Adam's filled you in.
Oh,
no, he hasn't. Maybe off air. Oh, okay. Anyway, where were we? AMD, yes. Advanced Micro Designs will bring its latest graphics hardware base on DirectX 11 to laptops early next year, aiming to make the Windows 7 smooth and a more realistic look. It's not too bad at the moment. AMD will first offer graphics cards with DirectX 11 for desktops, but it will deliver them for laptops later, said the vice president of the products group there. It's going to be interesting. Windows 7 is certainly opening up a world of different opportunities for a lot of manufacturers, and hopefully with the availability of drivers and things like that, which so far, so good.
Yep, and there's two issues there. I mean, when Vista came out, a lot of manufacturers were slow to have Vista drivers. So I think a lot of people have learned from that, and they're really ramping up to make sure there's going to be Windows 7 drivers around.
Do you think the third-party suppliers have, or has Microsoft gone out and done a really good sales pitch, make a driver for us now?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where it's coming from, and there's still a lot that are not out there because the sort of public release date hasn't hit yet. But I think that in general the industry is a little bit better prepared, and the other thing I was going to say has gone out of my mind. I'm sorry.
I'm just reading the guys on the forum. They have their own show there from time to time.
Yes.
Small Bombs has said Yawn DirectX. And then we've got another one down there. IT Help Desk. We get some great people to log on. AMD are good for overclocking. See, they're all techie junkies out there, aren't they?
Yeah. Overclocking is making your computer run faster than it's designed to go. Which is
is there a problem with that? Like,
dangerous
do they
on a good
crash?
Day. Yeah, they have a tendency to get hotter than they should, and that you've got to be very careful and really, really know what you're doing to get away with it. So,
but it's premised on usually the chips are over-specced for the purpose for which they were designed.
And I'd like to have a bit of headroom on a few things, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
but if you push the limits, then you might get a failure.
Yeah.
Have you ever overclocked any of your devices?
No.
Do you know anyone who has?
I have.
Have you? Yeah, but you need to. You're using Apple stuff, aren't you?
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek, that one, before everyone starts sending me hate mail. Motorola introduces a Google Android phone. Here they come.
Okay.
They've unveiled the first developed with Google's software, and it's called the Dext. D-E-X-T. Gee, they're running out of names, aren't they? Known as Click in the US, or Click in the US, the phone has a slide-out mini keyboard, 5-megapixel camera with video capture, 2 gigs of memory, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth access, and GPS technology. So pretty standard for what a current sort of mobile phone has.
Business smartphone.
Its biggest sell point is the new Moto Blur software.
Moto Blur,
which integrates contacts, emails, text messages, and updates and photos from social networking sites onto the screen simultaneously in real time. For those of you who just can't get enough of that sort of stuff. Yes. Motorola cancelled other phones planned for this year to concentrate their resources on the Dext, which analysts have called a make-or-break release for the company's market share. Because they have been falling off of late. How many Motorola phones have you seen? It's traditionally been the Sony Ericssons, the Apples, the Nokias, and that's probably about it, really.
Back in the old analog days, I think Motorola tended to rule. I had lots of their phones. But
they had little big black brick flips back in the good old days.
Yeah, I had one of the early grey ones of those. But since the move to GSM in Australia, Motorola really haven't done all that well, have they?
Yeah, anyway, you ever had a Motorola, Graham?
Yes, my very first analog phone, was a Motorola. In fact, it was one of the old Motorola bag phones, if people remember those. It had a big big lead acid battery in and a big antenna. It was as powerful as a car phone instead of a handheld phone.
I'm sure my Motorola rang your Motorola at some point back then.
Oh, no, almost certainly, yes. That would have been back in those days, yeah. It was a great phone. It wasn't small, but it worked. It was really, really good.
Back in the good old Amps day, was it?
Yeah.
Analog mobile phones and stuff. Yeah, good. In other interesting news, the 100-gigabyte Blu-ray disc is on the drawing board. Yeah, Sharp's spiffy new laser can even write them at 8 times normal speed, because that's one of the biggest problems is writing to these little things. They're very slow. Have you noticed?
Well, they're not that slow. It's really fast compared with a CD in terms of, you know megabytes per second or something. But because there's so many megabytes, it takes a long time. So you've got to get them really, 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 really fast.
We sort of use them in the industry. Sony call them, they don't call them Blu-rays for broadcast, they call them XD cams.
Okay.
And they come in two flavors, a 23 gig device and a 50 gig device. Mm-hmm. And copying the media off the optical devices onto a network storage, which is the way we do it purely for freeing up our machines, because it takes forever to get 40 gig off one of those things, that they're noticeably slow. It can take an hour or so to get all the media off across a network.
For how much footage, though?
About 40 minutes of high def.
Okay, so that's slower than real time.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's a worry.
Yeah, that's off the drive. And then once you get onto the network drive, it imports into the machines really, really well. But that's through the traditional... And having said that, the way that this particular format works, it's not like your average disk. It actually has lots of little proxy files on it and things like that as well, which it has to move and update and do stuff. So,
okay.
But anyway, it's a bit frustrating, the new technology. But hopefully, if we've got 100 gig, that means you're going to fall further if you lose your disk.
Yes. But 100 exactly gig right, yeah.
on the way to, which
so that would be a four-layer disk.
Quad-layer Blu-ray discs that can store 100 gig could be just around the corner after Sharp revealed it had perfected the laser needed to write such discs. And when you think about our guest we had on the show not so recently...
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Look out. There'll be stuff that'll usurp that in no time at all, I guess. So, have you got Blu-ray at home yet? Anyone? We've got a Blu-ray player. It is worth it for them. If you've got a good telly, get a Blu-ray player, seriously.
So I haven't got a good telly. That's my problem.
I've got an average telly.
So. Yeah, well, there you go. So as soon as you go down that path of getting those sort of tellies, you're...
I've been starting to watch high-def television, though, on my computer screen. I've got a 22-inch computer screen, and watching high-def TV on that is not going too badly for me.
Okay.
With my little plug-in tuner. Well, I'll tell you what, little external USB tuner costs $40-something.
It's a great way of doing it.
And, receives high def, and Windows 7 Media Center works really well. I've been really shocked.
Really?
Yeah.
But Ron didn't think much of it, did he?
No, but that wasn't Windows 7. He was using an old Media Center. I think they might have done, I haven't used the old one, so I don't know, but I think they must have done some work on it.
I didn't know there was Media 7 for Windows 7.
It comes with it, and,
okay.
I got this USB stick, it came with its own software that I used on Windows XP, and that was shocking. That never worked. I said, of the five or six programs I tried to record, it recorded one of them, and just didn't naturally make it as far as starting the other recordings. But on Windows 7, it's actually, you tell it to record something, it records it. You play it back, and it plays it back. It just works really, really well. It's how it should work, yeah, but it didn't.
Oh, okay.
I saw an interesting article during the week, which I think I tweeted, if anyone's following me, which is tech_talk_radio, which a media center on the Ubuntu platform. which I can't remember, it was Media Bomb or something like that, was the software that this particular article was talking about. Really cheap setup for getting it all up and running. I thought it was really pretty amazing. But anyway, I'll find that. I'll dig that out for you later on. So,
Yeah, I've been seriously thinking about going that way and having a media center of some kind. And I had looked at the Linux ones when I was only running Windows XP. But now that I've started to use this one just because it was there... Yeah.
Well, what I need in our household, and I don't know about you, JD, but I'd like to have a device which can serve movies off a hard drive, for example, so the kids don't have to touch the discs, because that's the biggest problem you have with TV.
Yeah, my kids have got really used to using the Apple TV to watch their favourite shows.
Okay, so Apple TV does that. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of heard rumours, and I'm sort of still in the throes of having a look around for it. I haven't really paid too much attention, but I hear the PlayStation 3 is a good option for that sort of stuff too. Mm. Pulls things across networks quite well and displays it on screen, but I don't want to go down that path yet. They need more exercise before they get stuck as couch potatoes. So, all right. Also this week, which was also very interesting, as Dr. Ron alluded to in the beginning on the news this evening, there was a group of individuals decided to attack some government websites here in Australia.
Uh-oh.
Which was the Prime Minister's site, Kevin, what was it, pm.gov.au, and also ACMA, the body that regulates internet / media / anything else that they can't quite fit into the right portfolio goes to ACMA. And this was the subject of a distributed denial of service attack. Now, Senator Conroy came out and said the attacks were quite juvenile, which I guess is any sort of response that you probably get. Now, the attacks were allegedly as a direct response to the government's lack of anything, I guess, really to do with the filtering system that's coming out. And, it's just an interesting that we've actually managed to rally that much interest or that much whatever you want to call it, I guess, whether it be... stimulation in the community saying that they don't want this. And then for someone to actually orchestrate a DDoS attack, I thought was quite interesting. And there's going to be more of it, apparently. They're ramping it up again, and they're going to be targeting a lot more of the .gov.au services. So where does this leave, Australians in particular? Because if you remember not so long back, as I alluded to in the opening of the show tonight, there was a gambling company in Alice Springs, which was the feature of a Four Corners report. And if you want to go and check it out, it'll be still online at the ABC site, which was also the victim of a DDoS attack. And what happened here, there were a couple of young Russian people that decided to extort this Australian company, saying that we're going to bring you down unless you pay us X amount of dollars. And of course, the organisation chose to call their bluff, and they launched a DDoS attack at the time and place and where they said they would. And of course, it took them off air for a considerable amount of time. Mm. And anyway, the push came to shove, and they tried it again. And they said, listen, you don't think we're serious. We will take you down. And they did take them down. And they took down Adelaide, and they took down all of Alice Springs, and they took down half of Sydney at the same time, because it came in from all over the world through the Telstra network. And a lot of people were out of broadband connection because it was just congested. Mm. So, and if you look at that sort of thing happening at the moment, imagine if someone wanted to really do some damage or really orchestrate an attack on a particular institution.
Well, when it becomes an issue of national infrastructure, of actually taking out...
I'd be waiting for the door to get kicked in, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that people like that there'll be computer crime experts at the Federal Police, Australian Federal Police, would be taking interest in it. Mm. And so will people like, I'm trying to think of their name, the Defence DSD, I would imagine, would be taking interest in it, wouldn't you think?
I would think so.
From an international point of view.
And on a state level, the counter-terrorism units could potentially be involved as well because of the damage to local infrastructure and commerce.
Yeah, and that might depend on what state you live in, because some state police forces seem to have a different attitude to technology than others. Mm. And yes, in some states, I don't think the police have heard of computers. I don't think they quite know what to do with them or how to deal with them.
Leading up to the event, Lydia Davis, our US girl, she actually tweeted the Ransom movie that was on YouTube, I think it was, which was one of those, as if you're watching Current Affair or Today Tonight, one of those movies where the person's face had been blacked out and their voice had been altered. But there was an interesting video there that went along sort of saying, we're really disappointed in you, local government, Mr. Conroy, and those sort of people. And we'll wait and see what happens. But coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, there are a couple of other issues that came to light today. One in particular was that ISPs They're the internet service providers, have been asked to cut off malware-infected PCs.
Yay.
Now, whether this is part and parcel of what's happening at the moment, we don't know, because malware is traditionally how these zombie networks, which are the dumb robots or the dumb clones or the zombies, whatever you want to call them, that actually do the attacking, this is the malware is how they get onto those machines.
Yep.
Now, the Internet Industry Association has drafted a new code of conduct that suggests that ISPs contact and, in some cases, disconnect customers that have malware-infected computers. The draft code, which will not be mandatory, suggests that ISPs take four steps to approach and protecting customers: identification of a compromised computer, contacting the affected customer, provision of information and advice to fix the compromised system, and a reporting function for allowing, for alerting about other serious scale threats, such as those that may threaten national security.
Mm.
So that makes me think that maybe we're this is maybe a bit of a being brought forward, if not a bit of a knee jerk to what's actually happened over the course of the last week.
But it's much what ISPs should have been doing anyway.
It makes
it's absolutely
a lot of sense. If they're in a position to be able to identify that you've got a problem with your computer and you might be completely oblivious to it, then I think, you know, it's a good customer service role to contact the customer and say, look, we've identified there's some weird traffic or whatever it is that they've identified is different about their computer, and said, and here's some options to fix it. And maybe even for a charge, come and fix it for you.
Mm. Mm. But no, this, I mean, we're not just talking about denial of service attacks and things like that. Guess where 90% of all the spam that people get comes from? Infected PCs, people not looking after their computers. Simple as that. And this will help address that problem as well.
There's a lot of that out there already, though, Graham. Like, I must admit,
ISPs are not doing enough of it, not nearly enough of it.
Well, maybe not the ISPs, but we run a small server at work, mail server, and one of the clients in our office, and we have several clients in our office, ended up, someone went to the wrong site, didn't have their anti-whatever souped up, and as a result, they got a nasty little Trojan on their system. Now, what would happen, everyone else in the office would try and send some email, and everyone would go, oh, why isn't our mail leaving? And you'd look into it, and it says, oh, you've been black banned on certain sites by certain anti-spam type sort of organisations.
But that isn't fixing the problem. That's just preventing the email from being sent out.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. But it's also minimising some of the spam that's out there. Look, I know that iiNet, I was reading on their statistics page the other day that they actually block 98% of their traffic to their mail servers. It's all spam.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's an example of some organisations that are actually being proactive
in terms of trying to prevent this. You know, think about all the bandwidth that's been taken up somewhere in the network. It may not be on the internet necessarily, although I suspect a lot of it is. But in this case of the ISP you're mentioning, at least their network's getting congested, because even for their server to block it, it's got to get to the server because it'll be delivered at some point.
Yeah.
So if you actually get to the heart of it and get people to regularly check their computers, and I'm sure the panels have always talked about this, constantly updating your virus software, your malware, your the various other protection software, so that you just don't have all of this traffic causing congestion.
Keep both your operating system and your applications up to date. Do the updates when they come out, particularly the security ones, the essential ones. You know, this is stuff you can do to prevent this from going wrong. But when it does all go wrong, the networks, the ISPs, as the providers of the network, have an obligation to keep that network clean and to keep people like that off. And it should be in the terms and conditions that you will not connect a machine that's going to damage, cause harm to the network. You will not connect it to the network. A lot of them already have that in their terms and conditions, but they don't enforce it by cutting people off like they should.
So I guess the important thing here is for the ISPs to actually take those first few steps of firstly identifying that there's an issue with a particular client, advising them, telling them how to, advising them how to fix the problem.
Yep. And you don't need to cut them
on a couple of occasions. Yep. And then I guess if they're being belligerent and not doing anything, then you probably do need to do something more drastic.
And you start by blocking, port 25 so they can't send out email, but they can still browse the web.
In order to get the downloads they need to fix the problem.
And then you progressively lock things more and more down until the only thing they can see is the local repository of spyware cleanup tools.
I was about to say, exactly right. Yeah.
So, this is what you need to install to fix your problem.
Let's
go and run an ISP, Graham. Been there, done that.
We have.
And now you're not doing it anymore, right?
Yeah, good.
Now, also, in further on from our the denial of service attack that hit the PM site as well as ACMA's site during the course of the week, a web security firm VeriSign has added a new feature to its Internet Defense Network to track distributed denial of service attacks. The company said that a new feature would allow webmasters to monitor their traffic and receive alerts when a denial of service attack may be about to occur. The new feature will be part of the Internet Defense Network offering, which monitors traffic and filters out possible attacks. DDoS attacks disable websites by flooding servers with large amounts of traffic, as we discussed, faced with the bombardment of many data requests, which is what's triggered by those zombie things. You know, people flick a switch and the zombies jump to life and they start requesting, hey, ACMA, give me your web page. Hey, Mr. Prime Minister, give me your web page. And, of course, no web server can serve up, you know, 13, 14, 15, 20, 25,000 pages in a matter of moments. So it just falls over and curls up.
I haven't run a web server of significant scale before, but I know Graham's involved in that sort of thing. If you believe you're about to get a denial of service attack, what can you actually do to mitigate it?
You can block certain types of traffic. You can block...
You block IP ranges.
You can block... Yeah, exactly. Ranges of IPs or traffic that's come through certain directions on the web. You can sometimes... You know, the botnet usually isn't as distributed as the botnet owners would like it to be. So they might have a huge concentration of infected machines in one particular country, in China or in Russia or, you know... Uh-huh. Places like that, and maybe, you know, if you're running an Australian website, maybe, you know, selling blinds for Windows or something in
it's
Australia.
It's unlikely someone in the US is going to buy some.
That's right. You can safely block overseas traffic without, you know, impacting your business too much. So you can do things like that. And also, you know, perhaps the website owner might not be able to effectively block it because by the time the traffic gets to them, it's too late.
It's still in the server,
but
isn't it?
Often your network providers and even your ISP's wholesale provider can often block the traffic way back at its source, so where it's entering the country.
So what you're saying is potentially shop around and choose an ISP, not based on price, but based on technical ability to minimise your impact on this sort of nasty stuff.
Yes, this is where we're having a smart ISP, someone who knows how to use the system.
Adam Turner has jumped on and said ISPs are making money out of this through excess data charges, especially the ones who charge for uploads. And there's only a few of them. You can count them on your right finger.
Yeah.
I think there's two now. I think. I could be wrong.
I don't think there's many ISPs that would prefer to make their money through infected machines and that sort of bad data. They may be making a fair bit of money, you know, by chance effectively, but through infected machines. But I think what they're targeting with those sorts of charges, those sorts of punitive usage charges, is file sharers, not malware infected machines. I think they'd rather have a clean network.
I think we'd all like to have a clean network, really, in a lot of respects. Makes for easy traffic
flowing.
Adam's
a bit more cynical. He still sees
things. Absolutely. Money is money, he says, you know. Yes. Play the ABBA song for him very shortly, but not tonight. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We've been prattling on now for half the show, so we're going to take a break and get a nice cold glass of water, because that's what we do here. We'll be back with Adam's view from the couch just after this, and we'll get the fruit box out, we'll turn it upside down, and we'll sit on the apple crate, and we'll talk more about Apple just after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This
just
is
the one that occupies
the
room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Androids.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines?
Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is backups,
for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is not in this evening. He's serving and protecting, building servers and loading up BitLocker onto them, I believe. So there you go. And JD's in this evening. First time in a while he's been out at, a better office, huh?
Something like that.
Goodness me. During the break, the discussions have also happened, both technically and offline as well. Andy send us an email. An email, yes, as you said.
So old tech.
Yeah, so
old. Leave him alone. Emails, all right.
Don't encourage people not to contribute to the show.
I use email all the time. Right. I was thinking we've got the another forum and we've got the
I just draw the line at faxes. I got rid of the fax the other day. It's gone. Telstra, that's another $3.20 you don't get a month off me for my duet line. But Andy was talking about Costco because, you know, how Dr. Ron was trying to... I think he had shares in that new supermarket.
He'd been to Costco and he was raving about it.
Yeah. He tweeted about it and, everything.
Anyway, Andy's listening to the show live for the first time tonight and didn't realise we had music in the breaks because we don't put the music in the
podcast.
There's
not much of it.
No, there's not much of it. We just need to have it come up for air every so often. But he said he was in Costco the other day and got talking to someone who works there, and according to them, Costco have been very disappointed with technologically related sales and the number have been well below expectations. JB and all those sort of guys, Harvey's, et cetera, obviously still where people go to buy their white goods.
Australians are always good on technology and buying technology. We tend to be early adopters as compared with some other parts of the world. But, we're not used to buying our high-tech items from the supermarket. We're used to sort of going somewhere, dedicated to that sort of gear, aren't we?
Well, I guess most consumers want to get advice on what's the best, bang from a buck, what features has it got, what's it going to do for me different to this other model, and you're not going to get that at a supermarket. You have to do your homework before you go.
No, it's just a box on the shelf, and you pick it up and put it in your trolley, or you don't, really, don't you?
Yeah, so if you've done your research ahead of time, you might be able to find a bargain at a place like that, but... you'd want to have done your research ahead of time so you know whether it is or not.
You know which model and what the cost should be.
That's right, yeah.
All right, there you go. So, thank you, Andy. Welcome aboard to the live show, listening to us on the stream or wherever you, however you might be listening to us this evening. Apple issues a massive security patch update. This came out today too. This applies for OS X, iPhone, and QuickTime. It had 47 fixes for a host of platforms. The patch covers flaws in the, as I said, OS X, iPhone, QuickTime Media Player, and patches cover both Leopard and Snow Leopard operating systems, as well as the interoperability with third-party software from Adobe, Flash, Samba, MySQL, and PHP. The patches fix 33 vulnerabilities in the Leopard operating system. Might be safe to load it up after you put the patch on, JD.
Might be.
Fixes 33 vulnerabilities in the Leopard operating system, while Snow Leopard received just a single fix, or maybe not. So Apple's iPhone got patches for a variety of problems, including core audio, WebKit, and mobile mail, which the QuickTime updates included four patches, some of which were critical in that they allowed a remote takeover of a computer using properly crafted malware. And this is what we were all talking about earlier with bots and zombies and things. This is how they do it. One of the more worrying sets of patches covered by the Clam AV antivirus product Apple is using. They covered serious flaws that could allow remote code execution of the system being hacked. So there you go. It's sort of up there on par with PCs now, isn't it? The amount of fixes and patches and things, because Microsoft had their big patch Tuesday the other day too. Which Graham, did you restart many servers and redo all that sort of stuff after you applied your patches?
A few restarts occurred, which is fairly normal for the time of the month.
Not much on Windows 7, I must admit. Well, it maybe just doesn't like restarting, or doesn't need to restart anymore. You just got, a lot of it was for the old Vista-y sort of stuff and XP. I noticed. Did you notice that?
I'm trying to think.
Bit of IE8 in there as well.
I've restarted my Windows 7 machine a few times for other reasons. Actually, I think my virus software wanted me to restart my machine too. So. There were a few patches out for the older servers, as you say. That was the one where I was paying most attention.
Okay. All right. In other news, as we alluded to earlier on in the program, Apple have released a new range of gadgets. Well, updated a few range of gadgets is probably the point. And Snow Leopard and all that sort of stuff. So Adam's going to take us on a tour from the couch and we'll find out a little bit about iTunes and the new Nano. Here's Adam.
Sorry, Apple fans, but it seems it's still no Blu-ray for you. Apple still considers Blu-ray a bag of hurt. Despite being one of the first companies to stand behind the Blu-ray format, Apple refuses to offer Blu-ray playback to the Mac faithful, not even in the latest version of iTunes 9. Clearly, the primary purpose of all Apple products these days is to drive you to the iTunes store, That's why there are no Blu-ray drives in Macs, no Blu-ray playback in iTunes 9, no hardware acceleration for non-Apple software in Snow Leopard, and no flash on the iPhone. All these things might encourage you to spend your money elsewhere rather than the iTunes store. It's only last week that Apple finally caved in and added an FM radio to some of the new iPods, although I wouldn't be surprised if Apple has found some way to nobble it. Now, the Apple faithful will argue that optical discs are a dead medium, but I say there's a lot of life left in them yet. The tech-savvy always underestimate how long it takes for technologies to go mainstream. Look at how long it took the DVD player to usurp the humble VCR. Blu-ray is just starting to take off as the price of movies and players drops. Once it gets into people's lounge rooms, it will stay entrenched there for at least 5 years, if not 10. It will be at least 5 years before video downloading and streaming is considered a viable option for your average household, especially for high-def content. Now, when I say your average household, I don't mean your average tech-savvy household. If you're listening to this podcast or radio show, you're probably not who I'm talking about. What I mean is stand outside your local supermarket and ask the first 10 people who walk past if they've got decent broadband of 1.5 megabits or more. They probably won't have a Blu-ray player yet either, but you can be sure they will within a few years when they replace their DVD player. Mention video on demand and they'll look at you like you're from another planet. Apple is hoping it can keep the Blu-ray genie stuffed in the bottle until the iTunes store becomes the preferred content delivery model for your average man on the street. It's got a long wait on its hands, but Apple's proven time and again it's more interested in protecting its business model than giving people what they want. Thankfully, though, there are some things that I really like about iTunes 9. The new home sharing feature means you can access the songs on other computers on your local network running iTunes. Now, at first I thought this was of no use to me because the lady in the house and I have separate iTunes accounts. After some testing, I now appreciate that it doesn't matter which iTunes account you're currently logged into for the iTunes store, because home sharing is a separate login process. For example, we can each be logged into our own accounts for the iTunes store, but if we enable home sharing using one of our login details, then I can copy songs from her iTunes library across the home network into my iTunes library. I can even copy songs she's purchased from the iTunes store as long as I authorize my computer with her iTunes login details. Meanwhile, we're both still logged into the iTunes store using our own iTunes accounts. At this point, I can play all the songs I've copied across from her computer, even if I disable the home sharing and shut down iTunes on her computer. The strange thing is that all of the computers running iTunes need to log into the same home sharing iTunes account. If I log into home sharing with my iTunes account and the lady of the house logs into home sharing with her iTunes account, we can't see each other's computers using home sharing, even though we're authorized to play each other's songs. It would make more sense if we could each log into home sharing with our own iTunes account and then see the contents of other iTunes computers logged into home sharing accounts that we're authorized to play. I know this sounds a bit complicated, but it would be a lot more intuitive if everyone could just log into their own home sharing account and make it work rather than having to have different logins for home sharing and for the iTunes store. Now, like I said, this is one of the things I really like about iTunes 9, even though it sounds pretty confusing. The reason why is that the lady of the house has ripped a few of our CDs to her netbook, which I haven't ripped to my MacBook. Now, I can stream them from her iTunes, but that requires her computer to be in the house and powered up with iTunes running. Now I can just copy them across using home sharing once and be done with it. That's beautiful. Even for Apple, that's a surprisingly simple way of doing things. And it's, for me, it's probably one of the best reasons to upgrade to iTunes 9.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, it's very hard typing on the chat
at the same time.
Panel operating at the same time. Very interesting observations there, I guess. And I always thought that, put it this way, let's talk about the sharing of the iTunes library just for a moment. If Adam's house obviously isn't like my house, I can't stand my wife's taste in music, so there's nothing on the machine I'd ever possibly want to listen to. But I can understand why some people might want to do that. The other thing I was going to mention too is the sharing thing. I thought that iTunes actually supported that you could make your library publicly available in an earlier version, and then
but you're only streaming it from their computer to yours to play it back. You're not actually copying the song from their computer to yours.
Well, that's probably a good thing, isn't it? Because, like,
if you're a believer in DRM, it is, yes.
Yeah. I guess, we tried it in the office with the big library that we've got, because they all live on the file server in the server room. And rather than everyone indexing their own copy of that with lots and lots of songs, it was just easier to index it once and share it, if you know what I mean. So that was quite good. So is this going to be... I know. Is this a gimmick? Is this going to take off? Because, like Adam said, you've got to jump through hoops to get it to work properly, and you need like a degree in passwordology to actually get it to work.
I haven't played with it yet, but certainly, you know, in my case, making some kids' videos at home, if Jen, my wife's got some songs on her iTunes library that I'd like to use in an iMovie that I'm making of the kids, then I'd actually have to physically copy the song to a CD. Take it to my machine, load it up onto iTunes on my machine in order to use it in iMovie. Whereas here, as Adam was saying, I can copy the song from her iTunes library to mine, and then it's mine.
And take it with you, put it on your iPod and do all that
sort of stuff. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, what about Blu-ray? This does seem odd. Like everyone, as soon as Adam said that, everyone in the studio has gone, because it was almost in sync with what Adam said, because they want you to go to the store to do that. Now, is there a technical reason for this, or do you think it's purely a monetary reason and they are...
I suspect it is monetary. Either that, or for some reason they haven't been able to get a license with a Blu-ray provider, which I'd be really surprised about. There are third-party Blu-ray players you can get to work on the Mac, so it's not a technical issue. It does work. It's just Apple aren't providing an OEM solution in their machines.
And they've deliberately chosen to do that at this time, obviously. So
they've had plenty of opportunity with upgrades since Blu-ray's been out to do that. Now, the next wave of IMAX is due out reasonably soon, so maybe there we'll see it. Who knows?
Yeah. So I guess it begs the question, Apple's iPod evolution could mark the end of a dedicated devices era. We're sort of seeing this merging of all different sorts of applications and all these different sort of portals these days, aren't we?
Now it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because the Nano that was released last week has got a camera and an AM/FM radio, or at least an FM radio.
I like the idea of the radio. I really do, because it means that you can actually, you know, you're bored with the music you're listening to. Let's face it, we do.
People have been complaining for ages, and the fact that the iPhone, you can actually download an application to listen to internet radio, well, that's not iTunes, so presumably you should be able to listen to FM radio. So that makes a lot of sense. What doesn't make a lot of sense is the fact that the new version of the Touch came out, which incidentally is almost exactly a clone of the iPhone motherboard. So
just without the phone part,
bit and without the camera bit. But everything else is the same. It's got the same voice software recognition. All the rest of it's in there. Why didn't they put a camera in that? Now, Steve Jobs allegedly said it's because it's a gaming device and it doesn't need a camera. Well, I don't think that's right. I think it's because they couldn't get the camera to work. That seems to be the word on the street, which is surprising because obviously the iPhone's camera does work. Now, people may not like the resolution it's got, but it does actually work. So it's a bit of a weird way to roll these products out.
Adam's saying on the chat that a lot of the devices that roll a lot of the products into one are generally not that flash. Do you concur with that? Do you think it's like multitasking. You can do a lot of things very averagely, if not stuff them up, if you do a lot of things at once.
Yeah, look, you can obviously get a higher megapixel camera if you want it into probably much the same space as the iPhone's camera is in. I guess it's a matter of which compromise you're prepared to have. If we're taking decent photos at home, we take my wife's Nikon digital camera or my Minolta digital camera to do that properly rather than use a phone camera.
Absolutely. So, but the phone cameras are great because you can use them for TwitPic and things like that because they're built into a 3G device.
And you've always got it with you.
Yeah, exactly right. Alpal on the chat said his Nokia phone has had an FM radio and internet radio in it ever since. And I must admit, I agree with that. Mine's done the same thing. And I get reasonable quality pictures. They're not, you know, you wouldn't want to print them up and put them in a family photo album, but they're fantastic for, you know, hey, check this out and look what I just saw and, oh dear, someone's had a bingle or something like that. You know, they're terrific.
So the Nano's kind of interesting. There's been a tear down on all of these, which means the geeky magazines have got a copy of the latest Nano and the latest Touch and pulled them apart to work out what's in them and found all sorts of other things in them that, in fact, hasn't been announced. Like there's a wireless chip inside the Nano, for example.
People are gone looking.
Yeah, that's suggesting
that wireless chip in the Nano.
One day it'll either have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi in it because it's actually capable of it now. but they just haven't enabled
that
feature.
Why don't they turn it on?
Yeah, interesting.
They're just saving it, are they?
Well, yeah, there'll be a firmware update.
Yeah, except for a Steve Jobs launch where he hasn't got much to talk about.
So it's physically got the chip in it. So it could be enabled by something like a firmware update.
Presumably it could. Unless it's being used for some other weird reason. It's in there to support, you know, some other chipset that it's needed for, but, you know, it seems like a weird way of doing it.
Why do we talk about Apple like this? Like, other manufacturers certainly do this sort of thing, but why do we pick and focus on Apple? Is this because they're trying to muscle into
a marketplace? Oh, it's the Ford Holden rivalry, isn't it?
Is that the reason why? Is it the Ford Holden Sydney-Melbourne rivalry and all that sort of stuff?
You don't talk about your IBM machine versus your Hewlett-Packard machine, do you?
No, but you talk about things like this and gets, you know, you put on the... See, if Dr. Ron was here, he's the biggest... He still thinks that the moonwalk was a forgery. Here's another interesting thing which we should run past him when he's in next week, if he comes in next week. Microsoft launches an open source foundation. Now, doesn't this just go in the face of everything Microsoft's been about?
Oh, but they put some drivers into the Linux kernel recently.
Yeah, but what's their motivation behind all this?
Yeah, that's because they wanted their virtualizations to work. But
yeah, exactly. Software giant Microsoft has launched an open source collaboration, they're calling it, dubbed the CodePlex Foundation. It builds on the efforts of Microsoft's CodePlex software repository. They launched its open source initiative in the same week that it was trying to offload a bundle of patents to the nearest patent troll in a bid to scoop a Linux, according to this article, which is really interesting. The foundation is initially being funded by Microsoft and will be led by Novell's Miguel de la Casa, who will join the new foundation's board of directors. It's conspiracy theory stuff, or are they generally trying to, you know, change? Like, open source has been traditionally...
They won't be generally trying to change. They might be trying to engage with the other side of the debate, which would be a good thing. People will be very suspicious that their aim is to do what they've done in so many other fields, and that's to adopt open source,
then their own, and
then expand it in some way, add some Microsoft proprietary... something, somewhere, somehow, I don't know how, that everybody's going to want, and somehow get some control over that segment of the market. So, yeah, people will be watching them like a hawk, I can tell you that.
I mean, interestingly, OS X was open source in the very early days. Well, in fact, it still is. The Darwin kernel underneath it all is actually still open source, and people develop for the kernel, so the non-GUI bits underneath. Even now, without needing, you know, terribly many licenses from Apple to do it,
right? Yeah, well, there you go. It can work in a commercial environment to be using open source software.
Absolutely, and that way you get your core developed, you know, years in advance of you actually putting it into production by people that want to do it aren't necessarily on your payroll.
Also, other interesting news this week, we mentioned earlier in the show too, Mr. Jobs took the center stage at the media event. So after he has done fairly well, he's been through a rough time, no one's denying that or anything like that, but it was probably good to see him back up on the stage doing what he does best. The 54-year-old executive, he looked thin but energetic in his trademark black turtleneck and jeans when he took to the stage and thanked everyone in Apple's community for their heartfelt support during his lengthy absence, because he was away for 6 months, wasn't he? It was a bit of a stay for a CEO.
And it's kind of interesting because, I mean, Apple obviously survived in his temporary absence, but the welcome he's got back sort of makes you wonder if he does end up leaving the company at some point, what's going to happen afterwards?
Yeah, he's going to leave a big hole when he does go, isn't he?
Is there anyone there to fill his shoes, do you think?
Well, there's a few people that have stood up, obviously. Other people have given keynotes around the phone.
We're going to have to put on Microsoft with... Bulmer, for goodness sakes.
Oh, yes, and he's done it again recently. Did you hear about his iPhone stamping?
Yeah, I heard about that. Do you want to tell everyone about it? Staff member had one.
Yes, at a launch of some new product, and I'm not quite sure what the product was.
I've been to Microsoft things recently, and they all have them, Mr. Bulmer.
They're rah, rah, rah. Yes, and he saw one of his people taking a photo of him, allegedly, with an iPhone, and he took it out of his staff's hands, put it on the ground, and proceeded to pretend to jump on it.
This is all allegedly, isn't it?
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Mm. And then walked off, and then made some quips to it. You know, all through his presentation, and where I've seen this talked about, you know, the obvious comparison is: would Steve Jobs find a Microsoft product in one of his launches and then run off into the audience, grab it, put it on the ground, and stamp on it as a sign of fitted pique? Probably not.
No, absolutely not his case.
It wouldn't be his style to do it.
No,
he'd possibly make fun of it, but he wouldn't stand on it.
But you look at the keynotes
too. But B, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, who's gonna go anywhere with a Zune? I mean,
there was the only thing that the other thing too that I remember, I think, was when Mr. Gates was still working for the company. Apparently, their kids weren't allowed to have Apple iPods. Products, which I guess is sort of, you know. Anyway, all right. So there you go. There was a bit of an update on all the current Apple goings on and stuff like that at the moment. Just before we go to the break, just a couple of other interesting things that we tend to miss out on because we get waylaid from time to time. VHA, Vodafone Hutchison Australia, is now close to being Australia's number two mobile operator. It's the formation, if you're not aware of it, of Vodafone and Hutchison, or Three, as they say. Those two guys joining together has overtaken Optus in the 3G customer numbers. Has the highest monthly per customer revenue of any of the three operator and is neck and neck with Optus on overall revenues.
So what's going on there, though? Because they're still... I mean, if you go down the shopping centre, they're still separate shops.
Yeah, I don't think it's been consummated yet.
And the networks are still separate networks, aren't they?
The deals have been done, but together, on paper, I think that's what they're looking like.
So they're running... As a corporate entity, they're running number two.
But there isn't a network that big. They're still two separate networks.
Yeah, not yet.
Running on different providers too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, you go figure that. Telstra being one of them. Yes. So, anyway, I guess everyone to their own. In other interesting news too, speaking of Telstra... It happened a week ago, but we didn't get to it last week, but I just thought we'd mention it this week, because that's what we do on the show. You get awfully distracted. Now We Are Talking is Now We Are No Longer. Did you know?
Now We Are Talking.
Telstra's propaganda website. Remember when, back in the days of Sol Trujillo and his amigos, and they used to have the proper Telstra website for, you know, everything widgy didge, and then for their opinionated pieces, they ran the Now We Are Talking website, which would sort of have a go at the ACCC and the government and anybody else.
I did not know that.
Didn't you know about that one? Okay, well,
it
doesn't matter anymore, but it's interesting to note that with the new regime of cooperation and peace to all, through the number one telco in this country, they've actually pulled the plug on Now We Are Talking. It is now no longer.
Mm.
So I just thought, oh, that was interesting when that came across the desk. But I had to read that because I must admit, I did enjoy reading some of the spin that was on that website from time to time. They all got up there and did all that sort of stuff, as they do. And other interesting news too this week, we're starting to see the new Intel Core i5s and i7 CPUs starting to come onto the market at the moment, combined with the new operating system from Microsoft. It means that things are going to go very fast, very quick, and we're now needing to get a little bit more extra hardware to come along and help us do that. One of the other interesting things too, moving into the 64-bit processing of computers and things like that these days, is we can now utilize
the mainstream
memory
rather than just in servers.
Big whacks of memory, which up until now, I think, what did the 32 bits only ever gave us about 3 gig or something like that of memory utilization?
Technically 4 gig is what it can address, but because there's some fixed things down the bottom that you have to address in a certain way as if they were memory, you only get about 3.5 gig of your RAM.
So moving into the 64-bit realm, and also with the new processors and the new faster everything, Kingston, which is one of the memory manufacturers, are now offering 2.133, sorry, that's gigahertz, let's convert to megahertz, 2133 megahertz RAM, which is very, very fast RAM for these new devices. Now, I was suitably impressed. One of the things you missed out on whilst you were away there, JD, was I built up at home a Windows 7 installation on a fairly typical box, but I put an SSD drive in it as well.
Yes, they're very nice, aren't they?
And let me tell you, it still boots in under 30 seconds, which compared to my old system doesn't. And if you think about the new faster, you know, DDR3 RAMs and all the new faster stuff that's coming out, having memory which is going to be this fast and on SSD drive, things are going to get very quick.
And if you get lots of memory too, then you might actually start deciding not to put some of your core operating system on a hard drive and just keep it in memory all the time. Which really old machines, the old 8-bits and even the old 4-bit machines, used to have batteries plugged into their memory card so that you could actually boot straight off the memory card. And they were lightning fast to start up because it was effectively an instant on. So,
but they tried to do that. When I say they, the manufacturers of motherboards have tried to do that by offering this little software option when you boot up. Did you just want to get on the net, or did you just want to check your mail, or did you just want to do
that's
this?
That's usually something
and that was all in yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As opposed to RAM that's actually ready
keeping
to go.
Keeping the RAM on,
So Yeah, we'll probably see lots of that. But booting an operating system in less than 30 seconds, I think, is pretty sensational for this day and age, too. It'll get better and faster, obviously, but compared to what I had, that was a great step up. And that was on standard generic equipment. It wasn't anything you boot apart from the SSD, the solid-state drive.
Now, this is... Well, with the size of memory, though, and going to 64-bit operating systems, one of the problems with that's been holding back 64-bit operating systems so far is a lot of hardware drivers that aren't available in 64-bit versions, and even software that isn't available in 64-bit versions.
Yeah, things like being able to use your DVD drive.
It's
a fundamental thing.
Simple things like that.
You can't get it to work on a 64-bit machine.
And just not having 64-bit drivers for your printers. You know, it's basic stuff, but it's not there, so... again, this is where the manufacturers have to come to the party with helping us to move in that direction.
The other thing, too, is we've all got multi-processing devices these days, or chips that have multiple cores.
Multi-core, usually.
The ability of some software to actually utilize that feature is fairly seldom, too, unless you get something that's
pretty woeful in a lot of applications. That's right, yeah.
So you're just using one core to run a program. So, yeah. You know, that also needs a bit of attention in the next few years, which I'm sure it will.
Well, your dual-core machine is still of value even if you've got software like that, because you might have one program doing a really difficult task, like in our case it might be compressing some audio or compiling some sort of video thing for us. But and what would happen on the old machine is that all the other processes would stop. Whereas with a dual-core or quad-core machine, the other things that run in background still run quite happily, even under those circumstances, because they've got the extra cores of the processor to use.
Mm. So one of our chat room frequenters has just pointed out what I was about to say, and that's that Apple Snow Leopard's Grand Central Dispatch, or Grand Central Core Systems, is actually is designed to optimise for multi-processors. Regardless of the application, so it's actually at the operating system layer.
Yeah, and that's obviously the designing for the future, which is very sensible.
And we've gone through this before. Was and this? The fact that they bought PA Semi, which is a multi-core processor developer, that they actually build the processors is probably no accident either.
Okay, so to get that knowledge on board, it's Snow Leopard also brings 64-bit operating system to the Mac world too, doesn't it? So that's interesting, with Windows 7 doing the same in the Windows world.
But doesn't it fall back? I'm not a Mac user, but doesn't it fall back to 32-bit unless you press 6 and 4 and you boot up, or is it a wild
unless start? You've got the 64-bit, what's it called? It's the BIOS thing that I can't remember what Macs call it.
The EFI firmware?
Electronic fuel injection.
yeah, that'll be it. The what is it?
It's EFI is the version of BIOS it's got.
Yeah.
BIOS, it's got EFI.
Yeah, so if you haven't got a 64-bit EFI, then it falls back to 32-bit unless you do a special key sequence.
And I don't have a 64-bit machine, so I can't comment on that. I haven't seen it in action.
The other thing, too, which I've watched this space, is the GPU technology, which I think Mac and I think Adobe, is it Adobe? Or one of the graphics people, I was looking at some stuff the other day, which looks very impressive, you know, CPU being one instruction at a time type sort of thing, and... GPU being many instructions at one time, that looks like it's going to revolutionise stuff. And Apple's got a very big finger in the pie on that one too, from my understanding. So we'll certainly see some changes there. All right, before we go to the break, just back to the RAM sort of related thing. The 4 gig of this new 2.133 gig memory has set you back about $400 US. So it's not too cheap, but at the end of the day, if you've got mission critical stuff and you just...
But that's today. Give it a few months.
Absolutely, yeah.
Look at the Blu-ray and DVD.
That's right,
$3.50 in the supermarket for the old DVDs these days, aren't they? So, all right, we'll take a break. When we come back, goodness knows.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
It'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
But I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the
why.
Way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government. Yeah.
I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy. I'm on 8
or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
That was done by one of our listeners, did you know?
Yeah, and just before that, Dr. Ron was very rude to me in that promo.
Was he?
I didn't notice.
He's just rude to everyone. Don't take it personally. Mm. So he's not in tonight, so feel free to, you know, let's get your own back. It might not end up in one of the promos because he does all the promos. But nonetheless, there you go. Yeah, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio in the last little bit for the show this evening. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron is not here, as you can tell. JD's making a welcome return from Siberia, wherever you were. You wouldn't tell us where he went. But Graham and I, we're in all the night. And welcome to everyone on the chat, too. There's been a lot of people in the chat tonight. It's always encouraging to see everyone come up and say good day. And the people that sit there and don't say anything, you know, because you can see who's logged on. Everyone
like
can
me.
See. Yeah, and like, you know, there's Claire there, and, you know, hi Claire, you've been very quiet. And Stryker, I don't think I've seen anything from Stryker this evening.
No.
Andy B's come up for the first time and realised that we play music in the break, so that's been a revelation. So welcome to all those people who do listen to us on the podcast and listen to us
live. We don't
live.
Mind if you sit there and lurk. I mean, probably
no,
people who are not used to chat rooms and so on might want to lurk and see how things go before
Absolutely.
They start to chip in.
See everyone get stuck into other people. Well, when I say that, in a very friendly way. We're all very friendly in our chat.
Yeah, so absolutely.
People are opinionated and they like to voice their opinions about things that we're talking about. And they might even draw out
of it.
Attention to what we're talking about too.
We occasionally.
Yeah, exactly.
If we remember to look.
Yeah, and you go to the music break and there's really expletives in capital letters there. Look at the forum, look at the chat, guys. Anyway, yeah. what else should we talk about this evening? Let's talk about regulator. The regulator is going to freeze nuisance 000 calls. I had a bit of a chuckle when I read about this.
Excellent. What are they doing?
Course of the day. The Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association has begun blocking the mobile services of nuisance callers responsible for making non-genuine calls to the emergency hotline 000.
Okay, so if they've got their mobile and they're being blocked, does that mean they can't ring 000 anymore?
No.
Right.
No, it's quite a tautology, this, when you think about it. The AMTA plans to freeze the mobile services of nuisance callers who, when blocked, will ironically discover that the only call they can make is to the 000 emergency service.
How's this helping?
Yeah. Well, I guess it means that they can't ring their friends and all that, so they feel that the service has probably been rendered useless and have to go and get a new SIM number.
They go and buy another number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yes, it's interesting. I don't know whether that's going to work.
I suppose it's seen that you even people like that, you can't stop them from calling the emergency service because, yeah.
Well, the issue is it may not be them making that call.
It's yeah.
Someone's on a mobile phone that's working and they're in trouble. They should be able to pick
and
up.
And what happens?
And dial 000, that's right. Yeah, every phone, no matter what state it's in, should be able to get onto 000.
And what happens next time? When that service is cancelled and the next person gets that number, because all numbers are reused these days, is it still blocked?
Good question.
You go and put your SIM card in and you go to ring, you know, your mum up the road or Graham or whoever, and well, no go.
Presumably it's blocked at the carrier level though, so...
Well, yes.
You know, when the carrier regenerates the number, they presumably go through and de-option it from all the things the previous party had.
Well, one would only
hope so.
Mm. There's a bit of Twitter news floating around this week. Twitter being the short messaging service, social networking type sort of thing.
What are they up to?
They're gearing up for advertisements in tweets.
Oh.
Which
I
is,
did see a new service level agreement or something.
Yes, that's pretty much what that's all about. Mm. And they're also going to launch a new analytics service for business. So you can obviously, right now through third-party applications like Bitly and things like that, you can see who's reading your tweets and what they're doing and how they're interacting with it. But obviously it looks like Twitter are going to do it their own thing at the primary level of the service provider. So, but even with the short messaging, with a little, I know what you're going to get, maybe a little... Eat at Farmer Joe's or something like that on the bottom of your SMS when it comes out.
So if they're now going to do advertising and have this sort of corporate professional service, are they going to improve their service so they don't fall over every time something important happens?
That's a very good question you ask. They feel
now,
like
now, hang on a minute.
They did fall over today. I was going there and it says service unavailable and it's like, oh God, here we go again.
But not even Google can survive the biggest of big news events. So, you know. It's a big ask, and Twitter haven't said that they're going to do advertising. They've just left it in their terms of service, so they can do it in the future. Yeah, so they haven't announced that they're putting any advertising anywhere yet.
Okay. Don't forget, if you want to enter our Wacom competition, do it now. We keep forgetting to mention that. Wacom. Go and have a log on and tell us 30 words or less what you want to one for.
To get a tablet.
You get a tablet, yeah. Not a one you pop in. It's
no,
one,
one
you draw
for drawing, yeah.
The ABC looks to expand iView with ISP deals. This is interesting arrangement because at the moment, certain ISPs, and I know one for a fact is iNet, I think Interno, but I'm not sure. I only know iNet because I've got a work account with them. You can actually watch all the content on the ABC's iView, which is the repeat of anything that's been on in the last month, almost, without incurring any download increases. So you can watch a 200, like an hour's television's about 250-odd meg, I think it is. Maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less. But it means it doesn't count in your monthly download, which is a terrific thing, which means you can go and watch the ABC anytime you like. And if you do like what we do, we run on our laptop in the living room, plug the HDMI out of the laptop into the Bravia, and it's not all bad if you miss something. It's much better if you catch it on air, but if you miss it, it's pretty good. So anyway,
it's pretty watchable, yeah.
The ABC is looking to they're trying to get on board with a lot more other ISPs, so that
That'd be good. My ISP doesn't do it at the moment, but
neither does mine. No,
but then again, I don't watch that much of it that it's a problem. I can fit it in within my limits. So
there's a lot that I would watch actually.
Oh really? You would watch more if it was unmetered, would you?
Unmetered on my account.
The whole back catalog of things like Four Corners for some of the more technically interesting programs that they have on there from time to time is all good.
And Four Corners is always good value.
Absolutely. And if you're after some of the the catch up sort of things, which is what it's designed for, a lot of programs these days are only on ABC2. And if you don't have a digital set top box or a digital TV, you can't watch it. So next best thing, watch it on iView. Because there's some great stuff up there on ABC 2. ABC 3 starts before Christmas too, by the way, for all the kiddies. Go's doing reasonably well. My kids love that.
I watched Go the other day for the first time.
I Dream of Jeannie?
No.
The Flintstones?
No, it wasn't any of those.
What's the other one? There's Josie and the Pussycats or something like that. Much better than these.
I haven't seen that for years. I'm going to have to watch
Go and have a watch and Go. Go's really good. All original Hanna-Barbera cartoons and stuff like that are all there. So,
I've been watching Go occasionally. The old Seinfelds are on it. And they're playing a lot of CSI in the evenings as well.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah.
I think that's what it was. I think it was a CSI back-to-back.
Ah, there you go, yeah.
All right. In other brief news, brief. Optus launches an iPhone billing application. Apparently, the bill shock's got too much for some. So Optus have launched their own free iPhone application that will enable customers to view, pay, or recharge their account using their iPhone. Have you got this?
I don't pay for my phone.
No, it's good, but I just could imagine there'd be people out there that, great, my new iPhone, and of course, off they go, and next thing you know...
So you download your bill to your iPhone, and they charge you for sending data over the network to view your bill on your iPhone.
Don't get me started on Optus charging and my private Optus account.
Oh, yes.
They're going to charge me for paying online. They're going to charge me for showing up at a shop and paying it over the counter.
Oh, funny, Telstra are the same.
Funny you should mention this. Funny. Look, a beautiful segue there, JD. One of my favourite senators who gets
That's what he's been doing. He's been off with Anna Corrin doing the segue training.
Absolutely. Senator Nick Xenophon, who is near and dear to our heart. He's fairly... He tries to make these guys see a bit of reason up there in Canberra. He's gone off the deep end about people being charged to pay their bills by cash, which is exactly what you're talking about. Now, Telstra introduced this recently. You go into a shop and you pay them, you hand over the folding stuff and they want to ping you for it.
Yep.
For the privilege, which is wrong. And
I honestly think it's borderline illegal. It's got to be.
Absolutely.
I've got to look up the definition of legal tender.
Anyway, Nick is seeking parliamentary endorsement for a ban on consumers being charged a fee for paying their bills by cash.
Yay.
Telstra, being the main offender, has imposed a $2.20 administration fee on customers who pay their bill over the counter, which is just, if it wasn't radio, I'd use another word. You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous.
It's beyond the pale, I think, is what you're trying to say.
But the other one that really ticked me off is I thought, okay, I'm going to pay online. I've got rid of my paper bill because they were going to charge me for that as well.
Yep.
So I'll set up a direct deposit. So that way, when the bill's first released, they get their money straight away. They should be happy. I don't have to worry about it. They're going to charge me more for that too. So it doesn't really matter how you pay. There is one way out, which I use a lot, which is BPay.
Disconnect.
No, I use BPay instead.
Yeah, BPay seems to have become a bit oblivious of it, hasn't it?
BPay works well. BPay is a good solution in a lot of cases. I really refuse to do the direct debit thing for most things. There's very, very few direct debits I'll allow because they always write their terms and conditions that, you know, if they make a mistake, you can dispute it and rah, rah, rah. But if they slip a decimal point and take out $10,000 instead of $100.
You incur the interest and all the other then, charges, yeah.
But I've also got
neither have I for that matter.
I haven't got that much money, but it means that if they do that I can't do anything. I can't pay my bills. I can't buy my lunch. I can't put petrol in my car because,
Adam Turner's just asked a question. Can you automate BPay? The answer is yes, through a lot of your internet banking
sites.
It depends
on your bank. If your bank's site's set up to do that.
Yeah, your interface with BPay is through your bank, so it depends on their
Commonwealth Bank definitely does, because I'm with them and I know. I've seen it there. You can do it. So
long as your bill's regular and predictable.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
But you can also go in there in a lot of cases, and even for a one-off, you can say my bill is this much, you know, it might be a different amount each month for like a phone bill, but you can go in there ahead of time and say, I want you to pay them this much money on this date at some point in the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can make sure that you do pay it on the due day so that, you've got your money in your account for as long as possible.
Mm. No, it's a good way of doing it. So,
absolutely.
All right. In other interesting news this week, Skype. You remember them, they do a voiceover telephony sort
talking
of thing.
Talking to people over the interwebs.
That's it. You use a mobile broadband either on your laptop, some phones support it and things like that.
Yeah.
You can call others for free, you can do Skype in, you can ring landlines, whatever you want to do with it. Anyway, Skype, apart from the fact that I think it was recently sold, eBay sold it, didn't they, someone? I can't remember who. But their Skype is terminating their Extras development program, which they announced because not enough people were using the tools.
Oh.
So no new projects will there be certified. The existing ones will expire over time. So if you're a third-party developer developing stuff for Skype, that's it. That's the end of it. Finished, kaput.
Move on.
Yeah, nothing to see here. So I thought, well, does that – you look at a lot of social networking things too, and you look at the relevance of some of the social networking sites. Are people actually still using them, or are they just making a lot of noise, trying to attract attention, but they're not being used? So is Skype being used? Like – I think Adam recently did a test with the mobile phones and looking at Skype on mobiles and things like that.
Skype support on mobile phones is really, really appalling because the networks cripple it.
Too right, for obvious reasons. But is that really the end of it? Are we now moving into voice over IP based on a ISP's provider? You know, like, I'm about to do that at home.
Well, that's what the networks want.
Getting rid of the fixed line, getting rid of Skype's great, but you go VoIP over that sort of stuff. And of course, if you want to make a international call or whatever these days, traditionally you use your mobile. It's cheaper because it's so competitive.
Mm.
So anyway, is that a downside? Is that where we're going with a lot of these applications? Are we going to see? Well, look at Apple for example. Everything has to go through and be sanctioned through the iStore.
Not everything.
That's what they want. That's the direction they're driving in.
So they can control what's on their devices.
Mm.
Are we trying to go down this, you've got to lodge it through us and then we'll release it to the world? Because Twitter, I think, are going to be doing the same sort of thing with their Twitter clients and things like that. So,
Users will revolt. There comes a point where you can only push your users so far and they'll revolt and they'll go back to, they'll choose an alternative or they'll... find a way around it. And this is what, this is why the cracking of iPhone, what do they call it? The de-unlocking, jailbreaking. That's the term I'm looking for of iPhones is so popular because, they've just pushed their users that little bit too far. Mm. So,
That's it, isn't it? You don't want to, there's a line in the sand where people buy a device because it's convenient and easy to use. And as soon as it becomes beyond that, why would you buy it?
Well, then people expect when they buy something that they're buying something that they can control and use the way they want. And, you start to lock them down too much and you're going to get angry users. Even if they're not buying what they think they're buying, like with DVDs, they're only buying a license to use it. They're not buying the content itself. But they think they own it, so they want to be able to play it on everything.
Mm.
So, and yeah, I mean, the other thing is that, things like Skype, you were saying about their dropping their Extras program. I mean, is that just a move for Skype going back to doing, you know, instead of Skype being all things to all men, just Skype being Skype and making calls on it?
Well, there's a level of simplisticness that works really well with that. You get your laptop out or you get your PC out and you put your webcam on and you call your friend overseas and that's where you do it.
And this is another place where a lot of these companies go off the rails is they've got something really, really good and then they add something to it and they add something else to it and they add something else to it and before you know it, you've got this huge conglomeration of things that, you know, really all I wanted was something to do voice over IP, but now I've got...
That's an interesting comment, because if we take it back to the hardware side, because obviously we're talking about software and applications at the moment, if we take it back to the conversation that we were having before about the iPod and its development and being a multi-function device, hardware's actually going quite the other way.
Well, that's right, because you don't want to have to carry around with you too many different devices. So you don't want to have to carry a digital camera and a phone and a Walkman and a something, you know.
So it's just interesting in terms of the technology, the hardware platform.
We found with hardware that there are some things you can combine together into one device and some things where you just can't. Mm. And this is where we're learning constantly as we go, and it's not obvious, and it's not really obvious until several generations down the track which combinations work and which ones don't. Mm. So, the iPhone might be one where, you know, they're starting to get the collection of things together that actually work well together, whereas in the past that hasn't been done all that well.
But Google have done aggregated software quite well. They've got a chat client, they've got an email client, they've got applications now for word processing and whatever, all pretty much in the same user interface, more or less from the same place.
So and again, sometimes things work together well and sometimes they don't. I mean, one of my pet gripes is Nero, CD burning software.
The voice of reason, which has just been called.
Thank you very much.
Hi, John Farnham. We're not to have John Farnham in the
studio. Nero CD burning software used to be really good CD burning software. You could burn a CD with it.
I gave up after about version 6, I think, because it was getting
too wayward. And that's about when you had to give up, because they kept adding more and more features to it. And in version 7, they added a feature called Nero Scout, which goes out and searches your hard disk for all the music and video and other media files it can find
iTunes.
And indexes them for you. And you can't uninstall it and you can't disable it. And it's led to a whole swag of users, including me, who absolutely hate Nero because they've gone not just one step too far, but seven steps too far and tried to take over my whole machine and slowed it down and put stuff there that I don't want, where all I wanted was to burn a CD, and now I've gone to another free burning software, and I will not ever use Nero again, where I used to be a real Nero fan.
And does this free software do DVDs, video, ISOs, and CD and audio? That's about all you need on a DVD burning package, isn't it?
And it doesn't install 15 gazillion other things that you don't need.
And then it fights with the antivirus protection software.
Exactly right.
It's a keystroke logger and a few other bits.
Although
and pieces.
One might suggest that should be built into the operating system these days anyway.
Well, it sort of is to a degree.
And of course, the search things are becoming built into the operating system. Yeah,
Windows 7 is very fast.
So having extra ones running at the same time, so you've got
DVD and CD burning
and stuff. And that's in Windows 7. That's really good. Yeah, you right-click an ISO file, and then one of the options is burn to CD.
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
It just happens. Yeah,
but that's where it should be. It should be part of the operating system because it's a basic, fundamental thing that you're trying to do.
But sometimes you want to be a bit more than just basic and fundamental.
Then get the stuff. Then
get the
Nero if you want to go
down that track. Don't get Nero under any circumstances.
Well, are you going to tell us what you're using? Because it's probably like, what are you using?
I wish I could remember the name of it. I'll find it in a second.
Well, okay, that's about all we got because we're going to go to the break. We've got Oddspot gadget and website of the week coming up. But in the meanwhile, while Graham tries to do that, did I tell you we've got a Wacom competition, JD?
And what do we get for our competition?
What do you get? Well, you could win the Wacom tablet that we've got up on offer at the moment, and we just need to know in 30 words or less what you want a Wacom for. Be creative. Some of the ones that have come in have been absolutely terrific so far. Excellent. Had a bit of a chuckle out of them. They've been good. So come along and enter it. It's drawn on the 25th, the granny weekend.
And you have to have your entries in by, what was it, the 18th Dr. Ron or something?
The sooner the better. Do it now.
The sooner the better.
Are all the details on the website? All the details should be on somewhere.
I think so. Yeah, go visit the Tech Talk website there quickly before we've got to go to the break.
Okay, now the CD burning software, DVD burning software that works really well, and it's not only is it free, but it's open source, Infra Recorder.
Okay.
Just Google it, InfraRecorder.org.
Is it a big download or anything like that?
No, it's not a big download. It
stores on Windows 7? Does it work on everything?
It works on Windows 7 for me, yeah.
Oh, that's good. And it does the four things you need: audio, CD data, DVD data, and DVD video.
Yep.
And
you've
got ISO if you need to do an ISO.
3.27 megabytes.
Fantastic. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Oddspot website and gadget of the week coming up after this.
Suffering is like attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was too hard and you drive away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool.
Tech Talk Radio's gadget of the week.
I have a gadget of the week for you this week, ladies and gentlemen. It's a brand new video projector which has come out onto the marketplace, which everyone's going, oh yeah, another video projector and all that sort of stuff. Well, anyway, this week, something which certainly caught my eye was a little Samsung P410M projector. And the difference is it's a very small pocket type projector which works based on an LED of all things that projects it. So you don't have to worry about all that expensive changing of light globes and things like that that projectors tend to do to you after a while. This one was pretty good. It's got SVGA rating, 800 by 600 resolution. So it's not that, not really for movies and things like that. But for $600, I thought it was pretty good. If you're doing presentations and you want to go to a meeting or something like that, it saves the $1,200, $1,300 base entry level for some of these projectors that
actually,
you get to down the track.
You'd be surprised how good 600 lights can look.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? So I just thought that was pretty good. So there you go, a bit of a Tech Talk radio gadget of the week. If you're looking for a little projector, I'm not sure whether they're available in Australia, but they've got RGB inputs, USB ports, and a little 1-watt audio speaker built in. Can't go wrong for that sort of money, I would have thought.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Okay, this one's a really interesting experiment in web searching. It's called Blind Search. It's at...
It doesn't mean like you've had drinks.
No, and...
It's not searching after it with alcohol.
No, and it's not for window coverings either. Blindsearch.fejus.com. That's blindsearch.fejus.com. You go there, you type in a search query, and it gives you, in three columns, the results from three different search engines. But it doesn't tell you what the search engines are.
Oh, it's a bit like Pick a Box.
So it's a bit like Pick a Box. So you look at the lists and the top three or four results from each of the search engines, and you vote for which one looks like it's the best results, the most relevant results. And then it reveals to you which ones they are. And you might be surprised about...
Yes, I was too.
I clicked on the box and was very surprised to see a Yahoo and a Bing had the more relevant results than a Google.
Yeah.
So
so the URL once again?
It's blindsearch.fejus.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
And today's Odd Spot, a few people in the chat room have predicted this one.
They know what's coming, don't they?
It's about a pigeon named Winston.
Winston the pigeon.
Now, Winston has made the media throughout the world. He's a South African pigeon, and the reason he's made the claim to fame is he's transferred data faster than the South African telecom system.
So, can we get Winston over here? I'd like to try him on a few meetings.
If he can go faster than Telstra, he's doing pretty well. Nevertheless, in South Africa, an IT company, Unlimited IT, were getting fed up with their internet service provision. So they did a test. They strapped a 4-gig data card to Winston's leg. They set him off.
As you do.
About 80 kilometres away, he landed
Did he have a limp?
Yeah, probably did by the end of that. So 80 kilometres away, he landed. Now, there's conflicting reports on the internet, somewhere between 1 and 2 hours. But either way, in the same time, they tried to send the file electronically via the telecom system.
A 4-gig file?
A 4-gig file, and only 4% of it had arrived by the time Winston had flown in the window. So there you go. Now, Graham's already said that he's very disappointed that we didn't implement the Pigeon IP protocol. It was just a bulk data transfer. Nevertheless, Winston has made some history there. So, Winston the Pigeon, 4 gigs in just under 2 hours.
Fantastic. Bring him on. I want Winston the Pigeon here. We could do lots with him, I think. We could test whenever he goes on mobile networks and things like that, too. Anyway, hey, that's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thank you, everyone, for participating. Thanks for everyone for coming up on the chat tonight. We had a bungee boy. Hey, a bit late. Anyway, we had lots of people pop in there this evening. We'll do it again next week. Don't know. We'll have one with Dr. Ron. We'll be back. But until next week, it's been fantastic. Don't forget, enter the Wacom competition and downloads and podcasts are available. You know where. So until same time next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.